hell that I was in, I'd do anything to be better.
I thought like a lunatic.
You kind of just have like that little bit of hope that it will get better.
You're gonna make it.
This began my surrender.
I am a witness of my own growth.
It's a life beyond your wildest dreams, and I just have to say, it works if you work it.
My story, that's what I share.
You're listening to Far From Finished, a weekly podcast where we share new, real-life stories of hope and triumph, told by the people who live them. Today's story comes to us from...
My name's Esther, and I've been sober since the 12th of October, 2014. I started drinking as a coping strategy when I was 20. That was 24 years ago now. So before then, I mean, I was quite insecure. I was very, very insecure, actually, and not particularly happy in my skin ever. I didn't grow up very happy in my skin. I never felt like I belonged where I lived and where I still live. I still don't feel like I belong where I live. And this feeling of not really fitting in everywhere, anywhere even, was very prevalent. That was everywhere I went, including when I was on my own in my bedroom. I felt like I didn't quite fit in myself as well as in company with anybody else. When I started drinking, it made me feel more confident, and it gave me that feeling of being a bit more comfortable in who I was. I was able to have a bit more fun. I was able to be a bit more relaxed. And I just really liked it. It was good fun. But then when I was 20, life took a big downturn, and some things happened that ripped me apart at a soul level almost. And it was then that I turned to drinking as a way of, you know, I just needed to escape from everything that was going on in my head. And so I turned to drinking and drugs quite a lot at 20. I'd had an eating disorder. I was bulimic for a while, and that got kind of forced out of me rather than treated. And then I went from that to, you know, right, if I can't destroy myself this way, I'll try it this way. I think I always had a bit of a self-destructive tendency. Very, very strong self-sabotage tendencies from a very early age. And so I think that, you know, I think it was always going to be something that I was going to be prone to. And just there was a catalyst that gave me a very, very compelling reason to need to find oblivion. And it was that, yeah, I feel horrible. I hate myself. I don't want to be here. I'm just going to get really drunk so I don't have to think. And eventually that led to dependency because I wasn't able to really face the world. I didn't know how to be with myself. I didn't know how to be with other people unless I was drunk. I didn't know how to be with myself unless I was drunk. The drinking escalated over time, definitely. The spiral then of, you know, you start from a place of deep self-loathing and then you create behavior that exacerbates that self-loathing, and then the need for the coping strategies increases, and there's just that vicious circle then, isn't there, of self-loathing and numbing, spiraling around, just making each other worse. On some levels, I was quite a well-functioning alcoholic. I was a single mother. I raised a child. I got a degree as a teacher. So it was quite a challenging degree that I got. I don't think I wrote a single assignment sober, and I managed to get quite a good degree. I held down, you know, I got good jobs. And so on the face of things, I was functioning quite well. I was a very chaotic person. I always had some kind of drama going on in my life. There was always some crisis that needed wine. I always managed to create this huge drama around myself. And I suspect now that part of it that was a subconscious desire to create reasons to drink. You know, if I was having a bad day, I could justify the bottle of wine, so I would make sure I had a bad day. You know what I mean? So I was ostensibly a bit of a fun party girl, really. I was quite sociable. I would be out going to gigs, seeing bands, out to pubs. On the face of it, having quite a good time. But then when I was on my own, I wouldn't be having such a good time. I remember times when I would hide from my friends because I couldn't remember anything that had happened. And so I would assume that I'd done terrible things and that all my friends hated me and that the best thing was that I never spoke to any of them again. And that would obviously trigger the self-loathing and the shame and then drinking on my own. There was a lot of drinking on my own. Lots of sitting on my settee in my living room, getting drunk, worrying about how much I was drinking and being scared about what I was going to do to my health and what I was doing to my child. So I was in a really bad way, but nobody knew because I was too full of shame and fear to actually let anybody know how much I was struggling. So I made sure that all my friends were heavy drinkers and I would engineer situations so that if I was with friends, we would always be drinking. I wouldn't really do much with my friends that didn't involve drinking. My entire life kind of revolved around drinking, really. But I managed to keep my jobs. I never lost a job because of drinking. There were probably times when I probably could have if I pushed it a little bit further. But I managed to keep my jobs. I managed to, you know, get through life. And so, you know, when I actually started telling people how much of a problem I'd had, everyone was surprised because I'd hidden it. But I was really hiding it for the whole time. I was hiding it from myself as much as from anybody else. Because I didn't want to face what I was doing, and I certainly didn't want other people to know what I was doing. So nobody knew how much I was drinking on my own. Nobody knew that I would be drinking before I went out, that I'd get to meet my friends and I would have already had maybe a couple of cans of cider, maybe half a bottle of wine before I got to them. So nobody really knew the extent of my drinking, and my denial was so good that neither did I really. 2013 was a real watershed year for me. The year started bad and it got worse. It was a terrible year. From the very start of the year, when I went back to work, and there were immediately problems in the workplace, in the organization that I was in, that were incredibly stressful and impossible to bear. It was a horrendous time. And then we found out that somebody else in my family had been hiding a drinking problem from us for a very long time, and he was hitting his rock bottom. And that was really quite scary for me to watch, because I couldn't tell anybody that I was also doing the same thing. And I was trying to support my family while looking at him thinking, but this should be me, surely this should be me. And then also at the same time as that was happening, my mum was diagnosed with cancer, and I was also having lots of difficulties with the father of my youngest son. We were in the middle of an incredibly acrimonious breakup, and my mental health was just crumbling with every day that passed. And my sort of real moment of realization came when I was listening to a song. And I love telling the story of this because it's one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite bands. And I'd been listening to the latest album from Queens of the Stone Age completely obsessively. I couldn't listen to anything else but this album. And this one particular song called I Appear Missing talks about feeling completely lost and feeling completely removed from yourself and from everything around you and unable to connect with the world on any level. And I was listening to this one evening and I suddenly realized that that was exactly how I felt. And it was such a shock to me to realize that that was how, that not just that that was how I felt, but that I could be feeling that way and not even having realized it. That it took me so long. I'd been listening to this song. It was almost like another drug. I was almost addicted to this album and particularly to this song. And now I can see now that was probably my subconscious had latched on to this album and this song, partly because I love the band, but also because there were messages in the songs that I needed to hear. The entire song, the entire album could be Esther, this is your wake-up call. You know, it's that pertinent to how I was feeling at the time. And a couple of weeks after I had that realization that I was falling apart, I actually did fall apart. I gave up my job. I just sort of fell into a breakdown that I desperately, desperately needed to fall apart. And then from that, I realized that I had a young child. I had two children, one very young, one was a teenager, living at home with me. And I knew I needed to do something besides just sit at home and drink. So I decided to train to be a yoga teacher, which is something I'd wanted to do for years. And that was when my recovery started. My recovery began the day I decided to train to be a yoga teacher, because it was that decision that actually got me sober, or the path that I then went down that actually got me sober. I didn't actually get into treatment. I got into yoga teacher training. I'd gone to see my doctor and had started the process of being referred for mental health treatment and for assessment. I was fairly sure that I was bipolar or something. There was something, as well as at the time I was still fairly much in denial that I had an addiction problem. I thought I had a mental health problem, but I wasn't really accepting the fact that I had an addiction. But I went and signed up I started this yoga teacher training course, and within a few weeks of doing this, I started to notice that I felt different, and I was feeling very different about myself. I was sleeping better. I was feeling less sort of fragmented. I was feeling less on edge all the time. And I was finding that I was able to not drink. I was preferring to go. I was having to get up early in the morning to do my practice. And I was starting to be able to sleep, which had always been an issue for me since I was a child. I'd suffered from insomnia, and that had been one of my reasons why I had to drink, because, you know, I couldn't sleep unless I was drinking. But I was finding that I was able to sleep. I was able to just be calmer. I wasn't getting so angry. I wasn't getting so stressed. I wasn't getting so upset by everything. And throughout this training, I unraveled myself to such an extent that I started to come to terms with parts of myself that I hadn't ever even looked at, never mind accepted. And I discovered coping strategies that I'd never had before. I found ways to cope with what was going on in my head instead of wanting to drown it out. I realized that it was okay to feel bad, that it was okay to feel angry, that it was okay to feel sad, that it was okay to feel happy, that it was okay to feel things and to actually experience those emotions instead of pouring a load of wine on top of them. And I learned to breathe. And after years of being an asthmatic smoker, learning to breathe was quite a revelation. And gradually, I just got to a point where I felt like I was getting less and less from drinking. And my hangovers were getting worse and worse and worse, and to the point where a night of drinking would make me, I would regret it for days afterwards instead of just getting on with it the next day. And so I've looked at my yoga teacher training as actually the equivalent of a fairly intensive kind of couple of years of therapy, because I did basically do an awful lot of therapy on myself through the self-studying that we had to do, and the the cleansing of my body and the cleansing of my mind that went on through that training. It was very intense training, and a lot of changes happened in my body and my mind. So my treatment was yoga teacher training. It was my treatment, it was my therapy, and it was my recovery community, because the colleagues that I had in my course were, once I started talking about my drinking habits, they were incredibly supportive, and they could see that I was going through these massive transformations. We'd meet once a month, and every month they would comment on how much healthier I looked, how much calmer I was, how much more together I was. And so they were seeing as well what a transformation was happening to me. And it was an incredible journey. So when I got sober 7 months into my training, and by the time I finished, I was happier than I have ever been, than I remember being ever. One thing that I'm most proud of is that becoming sober has unleashed the writer in me, which I always suspected there was a writer in me. People had always told me that I was a good writer. I'd always sort of had the fantasy of being a writer, but never done anything about it. And when I did do anything about it, it was normally I would be drunk and I either wouldn't be able to read my writing the next day, or it wouldn't make as much sense as I thought it did when I was writing it. But I've actually published a book about my recovery and about what I've learned about life. And I write a lot now, and I find it incredibly therapeutic, and people seem to get a lot from reading it as well. So that's one of the best things that has come out of it, is that I can now call myself a writer, which I absolutely love to be able to do. Another best thing is that my youngest child doesn't remember seeing me drink. He finds it quite bizarre to think that I used to get drunk. He doesn't have any sort of comprehension that I used to smoke, that I would take him to pubs. He just has no recollection of it all. He was three. No, he wasn't. He was five, four when I stopped drinking. So he doesn't remember any of it. And he suffered quite a lot when I was unwell. But towards the end of, you know, when I was in the breakdown phase, he suffered a lot. I probably wasn't a good mum to him in those last couple of years. And my teenager, who's now 20, he grew up with an alcoholic mum, and, you know, he had a tough time of it. It's made him very resilient. But he now, you know, I know that he's really proud of me. And my eldest son is really proud of me. And it's, you know, it's just wonderful to know that my children are proud of me, and that people I meet now actually have a bit of trouble sort of relating what I'm telling them about the person I used to be. Because I'm still excitable. I'm still quite hyped by, you know, I'm not the calm yogi type by any stretch of the imagination. I'm a very loud and excitable kind of person, but people tell me I've got quite a calming energy, even though I'm sort of like excitable and passionate and enthusiastic about things. I have quite a calming energy, whereas I don't think I did before, to say the least. I think I was probably quite high maintenance and quite hard work to be around, and probably quite draining in a lot of ways before, whereas, you know, I'm not anymore. So I think I'm a nicer person, and I look better. I mean, I look at pictures of myself from a few years ago, and now I'm 44, and I think I look younger now than I did when I was 34. I think I look a lot healthier now, and I certainly like the way I look more now than I did when I was younger. You know, I look at myself in the mirror now and I smile and say, "Hey girl, you're beautiful." Whereas before I would say, well, I wouldn't even look at myself in the mirror, really. I certainly wasn't telling myself I thought I was beautiful. But, you know, I do now. And that feels really good. I got some self-respect, which I didn't have that for most of my adult life. all my teenage years, really. So that's, you know, that's a really powerful gift that sobriety has given me. Self-respect, you can't buy that. You have to earn that. And I've earned it for myself, and it feels really good. And the other thing that feels amazing is that I get feedback from people who tell me that, because I like sharing my story and I like talking about things that I've learned along the way. And people contact me and tell me that I've helped them. You know, some people, there's one lady who's in my Facebook group who has decided that she's going to start she started her own recovery journey completely inspired by mine, and that's amazing. You know, I love that people actually take some value from my experience, and that I'm able to show people that a better life is possible, that they can be happy. So, you know, even if somebody's feeling at the moment that their life is hopeless, I like that I can be one of the people that can show them that it's not. And that there's always hope. I love that. I love the idea that I'm giving hope to people. The best thing that I've learned, the most powerful thing that yoga has taught me, is about the benefits of breathing as a stress management tool. And if you're learning to breathe, so when you're feeling really stressed, when you're feeling really scattered, when you're feeling low, however you're feeling, if you're feeling really agitated, if you're feeling really depressed, whatever it is you're feeling, if you spend a bit of time breathing deeply and being really present with your breath, it brings you right into now. It brings you right into the moment. It takes you out of your head and into your body, and it can bring you some fantastic experience of peace. Inner peace. It's wonderful for keeping you calm, for, you know, delaying the stress response. So if you're feeling really stressed and you stop and take some deep breaths, it can really calm you down. So you can step back from the stress and just choose a different way to respond. You know, if you're about to lash out, or if you're on the verge of doing something that you might regret, whether it's giving into a craving or yelling at somebody or just going to your dark place, if you take some time to take your breaths and just be in that moment of breath, you might find that everything changes in those few breaths. It is something that, you know, it's something that we all take for granted so much. But when we learn how to do it on a deeper level, when we breathe better and when we connect more with the breath and become more aware of the breath, it can be a phenomenally powerful tool for healing and for growth and for just general peace of mind. So that's my favorite tip that I give to everybody is be with your breath, learn to breathe. And when you're struggling, now I've been writing quite a lot recently about fear. And I think that fear is something that comes up such a lot in recovery, because when you're in your addiction, for me, it was drinking, for somebody else, it might be drugs, it might be whatever it is. That's your comfort zone. That's your safety net. And whatever else it might be doing that harms you, you feel comfortable in that space. And stepping out of that comfort zone is really scary, because, you know, I remember before I stopped drinking, when I was thinking maybe at some point I would have to stop drinking, the thought terrified me, because I didn't know who I would be if I didn't drink. I had absolutely no idea how I would connect with the world. I didn't know how I'd connect myself. The idea of living without alcohol was terrifying. But the things that we fear can often be the most powerful stepping stones to growth and to happiness and to freedom. So if you're facing that fear and it is absolutely terrifying and it feels like you're standing on a cliff edge, and if you're going to take that step forward and, you know, you don't know what's going to be there. There's that film, is it Raiders of the Lost Ark, where I think it's Harrison Ford, isn't it? He has to step out and take that step of faith and know that, and just know that the bridge is going to appear underneath him. And it's a bit like that. You just take that step through your fears, and beautiful things can exist on the other side of your fears. So if you're feeling fear at the moment, take one small step, just one small step, even if it's just, you know, pick up the phone and say to somebody, I'm struggling. Just pick up the phone and call somebody that you know is going to treat you with love and concern and compassion and ask for help. Or go and see a doctor, or go for a walk, or just do something to get you through that moment of fear. And the more you go through those moments of fear, the easier it gets to do it. And the other thing, another thing that I think is something that people really struggle with is when you're feeling like you've, you know, we blame ourselves. There's all this guilt and shame around addiction. And I think that it's so counterproductive, the shame in particular. And I think that an important thing to remember is to forgive yourself. Up until this point in your life, you've done what you've done. Your life has been the way it is. And if you can forgive yourself, you can move forward with love and compassion for yourself. There were three rules that I was given at the start of my yoga teacher training, which I've got me through so many tough days. Don't judge, don't compare, and don't beat yourself up. And I think those are fantastic. That's a brilliant motto to remember when you're struggling in recovery. Don't judge yourself, don't judge other people, don't compare yourself against anyone else, because nobody else is living your life. And don't beat yourself up, because it doesn't help at all. Just look at what you can do and move forward with love.